Passage, la nouvelle série de podcasts de l'Institut français. Un échange libre et sans modérateur entre une personnalité des mondes francophones et une personnalité néerlandaise sur des thèmes qui leur sont chers.
So cool to see you, Camille.
Yeah, happy to finally see you there.
Yeah, and it's lovely to have a conversation on climate activism. For the listeners, my name is Lena Hartog. I'm a climate activist for 8 years now, based in Amsterdam, but currently mainly working on supporting climate activists with the International Center for Future Generations. And know a lot about movements. I'm very excited to hear a bit more about your movement and everything you're doing, Camille.
Yeah, me, I'm a younger climate activist, 24 years old, so it's not... I've been doing this for ages, but actually not that much. And I'm a climate activist from France, and I'm currently mostly working on the deep sea mining that just came out, and also against the biggest pipeline, ETIT pipeline, that is going to be built between Uganda and Tanzania by your French company, Total Energy. So this is, my main two big topics I'm working on right now.
Yeah, cool. And I think for the, like, climate activism has become much more normal, like, finally and happily so. But probably a lot of people who listen maybe don't even know why would anyone become a climate activist. Like, I remember when I became one, I was also like, I've never expected that to happen. Like, what was for you the kind of starting point?
Yeah, well, it's funny than it's the question everyone asks when you are becoming a climate activist, because they kind of wait for these things that came to you, you know, like the revelation, and then you in French we said the click, and then you say, okay, yeah, I see the light, and now, like, you know, like God, and finally I became a climate activist, like there's no returns. But the reality is slightly different, and for sure it's easily for us to tell us a story after the fact. So if I think of it, and for a long time I just answer this question by saying I'm the lucky one that I've been raised in the middle of a mountain with parents that were really close from nature. This for sure gives me a special sensitivity to nature and to the fact that we as human beings are destroying these things that I love so much. But this is just my story, but it's not how everyone should become a climate activist. I do believe it's important for us to tell the truth, which is you always doubt. You have no idea what we're doing. We're just doing our best. This is not something that you choose so much. It's something that really it's inside your belly. And I'm a climate activist because otherwise I would not support the world, to be honest. So it's like an anger. It's like indignation that I turned into action, and then other people start to define myself as a climate activist, and then I'm like, okay, maybe it's what I'm doing. But yeah, it's important to tell that no one should wait for something that just suddenly are going to come up, because if we tell this story, that makes people feel that they don't have the chance to meet it, maybe. That maybe they can just oppose climate activists forever or just shame climate activists forever, whatever they think about them. But that's not for them. But what we really need if we want to win is that everyone, every single person just take the climate action at the center of his life. This is, for me, how we can maybe have some chance to win this fight. Mm. What about you?
Yeah, no, I do recognize what you say. I think they also call it the kind of heroification of,
exactly,
activists, where it's also this idea of that there is the climate activist people and then there's the rest of us, which I don't really agree with. And I also,
same.
I am a human person, like most of all, and someone who's deeply concerned about social inequality, but currently even more about the climate crisis. And I work on that in many different ways, one of which is activism. That's a bit how it is for me. And for me, quite concretely, I studied sociology, which is a lot about social inequality, and I was planning to work more on children and on children inequality. And at some point I started reading about the climate crisis, and I always thought the climate crisis is more for people who study ecological science. It's not for the social scientists. And then when I read a book by Naomi Klein, This Changes Everything, I can strongly recommend it to anyone. I realized, I think she literally said, like, we need everyone. We need the sociologists, the political theorists, the philosophers. So I felt very called upon to at least start engaging with it. And since then, it's become a very central part of my life. But not just because I'm an activist, but more because I believe that we are at this turning point in history where all of us will move to something completely different. So I'm dismantling the systems that don't work in myself. I'm dismantling them in society as much as I can. And that, if that makes me a climate activist, if that's the best term for it, then I'm happy to embrace that. But same as you, I like to focus on climate action and that term, and having everyone find their role in bringing change and having an influence, rather than saying there's some activists and there's some not.
And
that's a bit, yeah.
Do you recognize so much in what you say? Because just in the process, I received at least, to be honest, 10 messages a day that people just tell me, I want to do something, but where should I start? What can I do? I'm lost. I don't know. Tell me something. And then I used to answer by this question saying, okay, so we get an action this day. You can join us in a march. Then there's a protest here. Then we're going to do civil disobedience there. Then you can sign a petition, blah, blah, blah. But that's useful and cool for us because it's bring more and more people. We become massive and more powerful. But it's still tiny. It's still too small for what we have to do. So for now, what I actually can say is, like, by asking other Christian, saying, you know what you have to do. I mean, like, who are you? Tell me what you like. If you don't like to be surrounded by people, but you're super, super good at, like, drawing, that's so cool, because we need big, big drawing, art painting things for an action. Or if you work on bank, great, you can explain us and find some really, really useful data to see if this special bank is actually financing this pipeline and blah, blah, blah. And you know this, and now that I started like a year ago, I would say having this strategy, it changed everything, because then we become like this huge army that is everywhere, not always the people that you actually see, not always people that just claim it publicly, but we get people in every single place, and that's huge. Even in the biggest oil company in France, Total Energy, I speak so much with people inside this, not trying to convince and stuff. I'm talking about people that are deeply convinced with what I am saying, with our fight, and that just discreetly gives us the best data we need. You know, that kind of thing. So I think it's really important as well to realize that, as you said, what people have to feel is like find why they wake up in the morning, what really moves them, and use it to change this paradigm. That the paradigm we're in now is like destroying life on Earth, which is not a good path, I think. So if we want to keep living on this beautiful planet, then maybe like use what really we like and we do with passion, so that we won't have the impression of working. We just have the impression of really changing the way we behave and the way we être au monde, is what we say in French.
Mm-hmm. What is this?
Être au monde is like a philosophical concept, so I can't translate this so much. Yeah. It's like the way you are present on the planet, but it's looks shitty with my English. So.
A bit like embodiment. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, yeah, I would say. Yeah.
Être le monde.
Yeah. Être au monde.
Yeah, and it's cool to maybe dive into, like, with the think tank I'm working with, we are always looking at how do activists actually move from this campaign target, like usually a problem with a specific policy demand, to actually then build a campaign to influencing people. And I think the example you give, I'm quite curious, like for a huge target like Total, because you talked a bit about involving employees with that as well. Yeah. Like, what is the, like from the start, so at some point you discover, I want to do something about it, like how does that go? And then how do you move to finding out how you actually build that campaign? I think it will be interesting
so
for people just to know a bit of the practicalities of it.
Sure, I'll try to make sure, because it's been a year and a half that I'm working on this shit, but it's really, really so good. Like the really first thing was, so there were like, we were five people, and there was Louisa Nebauer. So the good thing is that also I'm lucky to have these girls band all over Europe that we know from the media and stuff. And so we became like really close friends, and we know we can count on each other. So it's good, like kind of, theoretical like red button that we can punch in case of emergency, like Louisa did a few weeks ago, saying, oh, you all need to come to Luderatz. And like 2 days after, there were Greta, there were Adelaide, there were me, and like all we came with all our press from our country and stuff. And so like Louisa came to France with Dominica from Poland, with climate activists from Uganda. So it was like a bunch of 10 people, I would say. And she came and said, Camille, we're coming to France to talk about the ECOP pipeline. I was like, what is that? I've never heard about this. And I just spent 24 hours a day working. Well, no, I mean, I sleep sometimes, but I spent my whole time working on climate change. And there were the biggest ETIT pipeline in the world that is going to be built by a French company, and I did not know about this. It turns out that there were like a tiny Friends of the Earth friends that were doing a trial about this already, but that really keeps tiny and like nobody really heard about this before. So we were like, okay, we are 10 people, and then there is the biggest company in France. How can we do this? And you know what actually in philosophy, because I study philosophy, intelligentsia, like the cleverness, is actually the, what we say, pelote de laine, is like, in what we say in philosophy, that it's like when you get a lot of things stuck, and then you have to take slowly by slowly, you know, and just try to like find...
Entangle it.
Yeah, entangle like this, that, yeah, that's the word, yeah. Entangle yeah. this. So it's what we did. So first... We try to choose the political side. So saying, is French government supporting this?
Yeah, because the basics, there is a pipeline.
Yeah, so a French company is actually planning to build a pipeline in Uganda.
Yeah, that's the basic
that's
problem.
The thing. Yeah. And it's the biggest heated pipeline. And so that's really terrific. There's a lot of people that are going to be displaced and stuff. It's neo-colonial as fuck. I mean, everything is wrong with this. So we had to do this. And so first we said, okay, is our French government supporting this? So we went into a public meeting where there were a lot of people that with a lot of power in France. And we just started asking a question saying, hey, excuse me, we were wondering, do you support this? Have you heard about this? And so we just filmed this with an iPhone. And they just answered blah, 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 like something. We like, they start escaping and say, this is weird. And then we just film this and then put it on social media. Then the press started to say, oh, this is weird. Why are they not answering to this really simple question? Are there actually something that we don't know? And then like the people, the press started looking at these topics. And it became such a thing that I refused to... So to make topics actually become big, I refused to answer any interview that did not talk about these topics. Mm-hmm. So every time I say, okay, yeah, I'm happy to answer your question, but then you have to talk about the eco pipeline. And first, sometimes it was funny because they just don't know about this, so they show me the wrong pipeline and I have to, you know, and then it became such a thing that now when Emmanuel Macron is having a 1 hour interview, one of the questions is about ECOP. So this is so cool. But then after we had to see, okay, who is financing the pipeline? Because without money, they can't do it. So we start working with bank. So we just called and find people saying, hey, how did it work? How do we finance the pipeline? And then they explain us that you can actually know if your money is supporting indirectly this specific pipeline. So then we find people that were really good with computer, like really geek people from Harvard, and I didn't know anything about this. But they say, oh, first it's simple. We can make you like an app, and then you just have to click on here saying, oh, okay, I have 10,000 euros in this specific bank. So it takes like one minute for the people to do this. And then you can directly send an email to the representative of your bank saying, oh, I get like 100 euro this. This is financing a pipeline. I don't want my money to finance this, so please. We move. And so we did this action, and so thousands of emails have been sent, and so many banks actually dropped. So they decided not to finance anymore. So we played on reputation. So because attacking this huge TotalEnergies is too big, so we had to, you know, take the steps. So first the government, then the bank, then now the insurance. And so for the insurance, so there is this marketplace of insurers, because without any insurers, they can't do this. So we went to London, and I just make a story saying, hey, I'm in London. There's this huge marketplace of insurers. We need them to drop. Who is in? Who want to join? And we were only like 4 people that came out. And we just make a sign saying, you know, the thing that you see in social media saying, you should not insure ECOP, change my mind. And we went there every single day for 3 months. I just started the first day, and then I go back to Paris, and then people start come over and just sign for 1 hour, another hour, another hour at the lunch break. And so every time they're just a representative from different insurance, and we get more than 30 now that I'm talking. Yeah, 13, sorry, that actually dropped. So now they are having hard time finding an insurance. Well, I could talk for a long time about this, but just to let you know that now the pipeline is late. We don't know yet if they're going finally to make it or not. There's many chances that we just lose. But what I really find so interesting with this is that we actually are telling the story that they can't decide without us. Taking fossil fuel out of the soil isn't something that just company can decide lonely. That just put everyone at danger, so we are not going to let them do this. And the good thing with this is that we have been artists that make special song, dancers that dance in the thing. We've got like people working in banks, people working in computer, people working in insurers, and so on and so on and so on and so on, that actually help us really strategically, precisely to build this campaign.
So cool. And it's, I think it's also good. Like, what I love about your story is the small wins in every step, because that's, I think, with anyone working on the climate crisis, the big win I think we will not have, right? Like, the climate crisis is already irreversible. What we can now do is make sure we do it as well as possible, as humane as possible, save as many lives as possible. And every step along the way gives us motivation to continue, right?
Yeah.
So even if Macron talks about something, it means you won. If you change the debate, it means you won. If people, employees in the company actually want to join, it means you won as well.
Yeah, and even if we lose for this one, it will say that for before building another pipeline, and we say, oh my God, it's going to be so annoying. Please, people working at the bank saying, okay, please just go out, go rid of oil, because like, we're going to have all the climate activists that just came to every of our meeting, and it's just so much money in security, so please just drop this, you know. It's also about this. We change reputation, what we accept, what we don't accept as a society. This is what changed, even if we lose the biggest fight.
That's it, yeah. And that's, I think, also the difficult impact of climate activism that's impossible to measure, is what would happen if we wouldn't be there, right? Because there's this huge lobby from the fossil industry going on behind walls, and none of us knows what exactly is going on, but we know how much money is going there, right?
Yeah.
Millions and millions of euro, while we in our volunteer time, often some NGOs in pay time, try to compensate for that. And I think what you highlight is super interesting, this thing, okay, now at least we know every new fossil fuel company in France that wants to build a pipeline, they know we're watching, right?
Exactly.
Like, and I think that's it's a way less highlighted aspect. It's also something I know from when I started with my activism, I first started in my own life. So I started like, oh, I'm going to be like zero waste. I'm going to stop flying. I'm going to do all those things. And especially with flying, I got so frustrated because I realized, oh my God, their whole system for trains in Europe, it's so much more expensive. It's harder to book a ticket. And I think the same way what I heard in your story about starting from this like general surprise and frustration, like, why is policy on aviation so different? Same, like, why is no one talking about this pipeline? This curiosity then brought us to actually start thinking, okay, if aviation isn't tackled by our local government, because we started asking local politicians in the Netherlands, why is there no, for example, tax on kerosene, which is crazy. Like, on fossil fuel for cars, we pay tax. For aviation, we don't. And then that same, and I think that's for anyone who's interested in doing something with activism, it's always like, at which arena is it the most logical? So with aviation, we quickly found out the Dutch government says, and the politicians literally told us, we can't decide on this because this is international policy. So then we decided, okay, let's see if we can go to the international stage, which is the Conference of Parties, so the COP, and highlight the topic of aviation there. So we organized a sailing trip. That's also, I think, how we know each other from a separate friend that I met on board. And we organized this sailing trip to not only talk about the lack of policy on aviation, but to also come with solutions. Like, this is what the travel industry could look like and might look like, change policy in that sense. And I think from looking at the reality of activism, I think a lot of it is also very connected to research, to every step, to start to find out, okay, if I want to change local policy, I go to the municipality. If I want to change national policy, I have to start engaging nationally. If I need to go higher, I need to go internationally to what they're doing at the Conference of Party as well. And I do think for the type of activism that's at an international scale, we might not need everyone, but we do absolutely need everyone in every organization, in every company, in every municipality. And even without calling yourself an activist, you can start doing that work.
Exactly. Exactly. And specifically that also something I'm often asked is like the daily reality of being an activism. And I think we really need to deconstruct this, as you said, this aerization, because of course there is a certain privilege of being an activism. I mean, I'm coming from middle class. I was like a boursier, so within France, like I get some grant for doing my studies and stuff, but still I am lucky to have parents that support me like mentally, that I don't have any pressure for this. I I can do civil disobedience because also I'm a white woman, so I mean I am less scared of police than if I were black or if I were like a from other minority there. So of course, like, we need to take into account that what we are doing is privilege activism for sure. But with privilege comes responsibility for me. So yeah, just, I don't know what is for you, like, how does it look like being a daily, like your daily routine of activism? Yeah.
I wake up, this is my skincare routine. No, I think you mean the rest. No, so I think I'm also now, I started when I was 22, I'm 30 now, and this is the first job I have, like full-time job for the longer term, that lets me work on activism. So it took me around 7 years. And before that, I've had like temporary jobs, a bit related to activism. I had freelance jobs for 3 days a week. That's what I would often do. Like, I work for 3 days a week. I don't spend too much. Then I have 4 days a week to do activism, to organize stuff voluntarily. So that's part of the reality for me. And now it's a bit different because now in my job, I get to support activists financially, strategically. So it feels much more stable for the first time. Which I'm very lucky with, I'm very happy
lucky
with.
You.
And some of the activists we're supporting, because the think tank I work for both does think tank work and as well as philanthropy. So that's also my mission with the work, is to make it more possible for other activists around Europe to also actually do their work. So we're funding, for example, a Polish group of activists, you know them as well. Mm-hmm. And when they started, they were like 20, you know, like they didn't have any income next to it. Their parents already started worrying, like, okay, where is your future going? How do you have enough time? And then we were able to give them a small grant, not just for them, but especially to build a camp for the whole region of Eastern Europe, to build capacity within activists. Because a lot of people might wonder, like, where the cost is of activism, because going to the street with a sign, like, you can take the cardboard from your pizza, right? But then making flyers, building actually capacity to have weekends, train travel, like just train accommodation travel. And logistics cost a lot of money. And those are all, it's not huge amounts of money, but even a little bit helps as well. So you now do see this huge scene of philanthropy going towards supporting grassroots activists, because everyone is starting to understand that activists are crucial in societal change. So if we want to reach the climate targets, it's also important to invest in activists, because otherwise no one can do it. Because I'm also curious for you, you're like, you're 25. Like,
yeah,
Do you work next to your activism? Do you do what I did a bit, like some freelancing and then some activism? Are you lucky enough to be paid
for it?
Yeah,
it's a bit of chaos. I don't have the best business model, but to be honest. And I do study economy, which is a shame, because I'm... But it's as you said, I mean, especially in Europe, you're not paying. I mean, in the States, maybe a difference with like the charity kind of culture, but in France, at least, you're not getting paid for being an activist. I mean, you can work on specific NGOs, but if you're activist, as I am, saying that I never working alone, of course, I'm always organizing things with many different NGOs and special topics, expert and stuff, and that answer the question about my daily life. Like, there's not such a single day that looks like another, but it's like, okay, spreading things in the media to actually raise awareness. Also working a lot with scientists that just gave us the main things they want to exist in the public on the public sphere. So this is taking me a lot of time, but I think it do matters for me so much to give the power to people. You have first to give them the knowledge as well. Then organizing all this. So there's the social media part that we saw, but then there's many things that you have to do. When we plan an action that they just automatically send an email to such a representative, then we need to find out the contact of this, to be strategic and ask, okay, who should we send this? Who is the responsibility person? To read the email, to build all the electronic things and to make it work, and so on and so on. Then also I have a lot of lobbying meetings that I don't say publicly, but a lot with representative ministers, diplomats and stuff like this. And so all of this, I'm not getting paid, and it even cost me money to do this, you know, to go travel some on places in Europe. Gonna go to the European Parliament next week. I'm paying my train ticket for going there. But then, so in order to pay this, I'm like working on the side. So, but it's like always related. And once again, I'm a super lucky one, because I'm getting a bit public in France, so I can lead conferences sometimes and get paid for this. Writing a book, see that also that helps me. And I'm playing at the theater. I just like reading a text from George Sand. So these really tiny things that mixed heart and climate change, because it's also something for me that is super, super powerful using music, dance, things like this. So yeah, but it's not something that you can do for ages. I mean, if I plan at some point to get a family, like get kids and stuff, I can't do it like this, because someone's, I mean, I'm once again, I'm super lucky and I'm not complaining, but you can't tell to people just having this chaos life forever. It's not for everyone. And if you have a grant that you have, like something you have to pay back your studies, if you have to pay back, then you have to have some kind of stability as well. So I think what you are doing with your job is super, super important for us, because it would help more and more people to get engaged. Otherwise, they don't have time to do so, because they have to work for their daily life.
Yeah. And it does relate. Yeah, it does relate to what we talked about at the start. This question of, like, who is a climate activist, and is it like, is that the question? Or I think both of us agree it's more about how can as many people as possible do climate action. And I think for the small group of people that kind of drives the climate movement and does it full time, I'm very happy that we can support them with grants.
Exactly.
But for me, the bigger question is, how can anyone in any place start behaving like a climate activist as well? Even if you take 2 hours of your week.
Exactly.
To, for example, question your board, like, hey, what is our sustainability policy right now? Or you take 2 hours to sit with your friends, some of whom might work in the fossil industry, some of whom might actually have connections to political parties, and you question them, like, hey, are you doing everything you can on climate policy? And is there any way I can help? And I really liked what you said at the start as well about asking back this question, not just us telling people what to do, but more, what is everyone's unique place of influence? Like, everyone has this completely unique place, because no one can influence the people around you like you can. If I tell it, like, I'm just a stranger to most people, but if I tell my mom something, she's going to be like, okay. Well, I mean, maybe my mom is also, she also has her own opinion, but she will listen.
No, but you're
well.
Right, because we've been working with psychologists as well. Because, yeah, it was, of course, in the daily process, there is also many times about strategy, what actually works the best. And I'm lucky to work with a psychologist there that can tell me how the brain is functioning and how can you convince people better. And this is what they said. We were working on the presidential election, not for a specific person, but like for how can we make sure that young people go for voting, because old people basically vote more for right-wing people that do not care about climate change. And so we found out a study that told us that the best way to actually make someone change is by the kids. So we made a whole campaign that we asked people to call their grandparents saying, please vote for me. I'm going to face the effect of the decision that are going to be taken for the 5 coming years. So please vote for me and vote this one, which were the person that most NGOs said they were the most engaged in climate change issues. And it works so well. Like, this is one of the most powerful thing that we could have done for changing people's vote. And we get like tons of message of people saying, okay, this is the first time my grandmother actually changed his vote. And so that was really powerful. So what you say is super true. And just like, yeah, to finish, also what I feel as a climate activist is that we are just organizing organizing a society where it's easier to act for climate action, to take climate action as a society, as a citizen, I would say. So what you say is so much that, I mean, we're just organizer. I feel like we have the capacity to put people in contact, you know, having the people working inside banks with the data scientists, with the people on the ground, with farmers, with stuff. And we are just at the middle of this and trying to coordinate all these actions so that people feel in power. And it's super, super important for me. What is key is like to make people not feel hope or scares and something, not about this. It's like they actually believe and feel inside themselves that they do have power. Because what they're like our government and what like the fossil fuel industry and so everyone was so good at doing is that make us feel that we can't do anything, that there's no other road, that there's no other path, that this is the only way we can, and that we have to just see our life pathing without doing and saying nothing for the kids, and that it's the way it is. You know, it's too big, it's too long, it's too complicated. And for me, what I feel that is so powerful is when people say, oh, wow, I did not know we can actually do this. we've been doing this. We are like 10 people and we just make change. Like, for instance, we won one of the biggest thing of my activist career, I would say. We went Emmanuel Macron saying that he are going to stop deep sea mining. And 6 months ago, he said that he was really in favor of deep sea mining. And we started, we were like 10 people. And then the people that just joined said, no, wow, I sent an email. I thought that it would never work. And at the end, when they see that we actually made it, it requires time, so much energy, so much strategy and stuff. It's not like one story that would change the world, for sure. But still, they realize that it can happen. And that gives them so much power that they want to never stop.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a beautiful.
Lena, do you want to add something on the finance of activists? Because I think it's really, really new. Yeah. On in France, well, it's super new. We couldn't even imagine this was existing.
Yeah, so I think when I started with my climate activism myself, one of the first questions I got from my parents and the people around me was, how am I gonna finance myself, right? Like, taking a job next to it might work for a while, but not really for the long term. So I'm really happy to now started working for an organization that tries to support climate activists. And I realized now by talking to other people in my field that it's actually a growing field. So within philanthropy, so the whole field of supporting, like giving donations to charity, there's now more and more interest in activists actually because of the success of the youth movements. So if people have seen Greta and seen her get super popular and global, and everyone's like, ooh, I want to give my money to Greta. But then, of course, Greta already has quite some funding right now. So now I'm very happy that people start looking beyond that and start questioning how can we support activists. So we only work, the foundation I work for, on a basis where we look for the people that we're trying to support. And for us, it's really two ways. Like, we're looking for activists that are already doing great work in changing policy, in putting public pressure. And then we work with them to see how they can adopt policies even more strategically. So I help them with their strategy. I help them with how they do their activism. And it's really simple things, like already a few thousand euro can help for an activist group, because most of them still don't get paid from us. Like, it's small grants sometimes, but it can be for like printing flyers, so to have some funding for that. It can be to organize capacity. Like, for example, in Europe, you have in the western part of Europe, in the Netherlands, France, Belgium, there's quite some big movements. But in Eastern Europe, it's not just that the movements are small, it's also that the government is actively funding against climate movements. So they give youth who are anti-climate, they give them funding and they can build their cases. So that's why we try to focus partly on influential countries like the Netherlands and France, but we also try to focus on countries where the climate movement is really small, just to give them training as well, to let, for example, Greenpeace help them. And I think this part of activism is very often underestimated. Also now with the youth movements, the idea that you have to train yourself to be an activist and to learn from generations above you as well. But I think we'll keep fighting and keep doing it. And it was really cool to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this one.